Welcome to Time Code Presents. Today, the gang gets to wrap up episode 707 the best way we know how. We get to hang out with the world-famous Prince of D. He gives us a refresher course on how to spot an extremely rolling movie and how to avoid suck-ass talk movies. We also catch up with the filmmakers from episode 707, Neela Jefferson, Michael Arcos, Sadie May, and Eric Williamson, to talk about their projects and the future. Hosted by Rome Julian, John Wood, and Randy Perez. Here we go.
Oh, I've never been in the Broad yet.
Oh no, you gotta go to the Broad.
Yeah,
and
we have a screening. We showing Blade, dog. Next Tuesday.
Tuesday, I'll be coming from work. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Oh, okay.
So
That should be fun to go and have a little field trip and all. And whenever we do, we'll tell you all about it. But in the meantime, 707.
707. We only got 8 episodes this season. For the season 7, that was the whole plan. We're going to lead in some more exciting stuff in a little bit. But 7, we got 2 more. This one and another one.
Plans change, pal. We go from 1 episode for the other, 10 episodes, to 12, to that.
Yeah, well, no. But I mean, the thing is you know, a lot of things started to pop off. And yes, we got a lot of opportunities. We're rolling into Scream Fest in October. And in order to do that, we need to have a little runway because there's a bunch of other stuff that we're doing. So it's
plus
better.
We wanted just a super solid season, and I think that's what we got.
No, that's true. And we will be releasing. I know Randy Mack has been driving us crazy about it over the last few years, but we will be releasing the joint picture projects. But we don't want to just dump everything out because then you kind of like. The world just doesn't operate that way anymore.
Yeah, and we're also holding it off because whenever we kind of have to push the joint picture project coming up in October.
You have to explain it. Yes, like, what the hell is this? Exactly. And so people figure out what it is. So who's going to be on? Who's on this episode?
Nice little cold open by John Deal. It was fun making that for him. That was actually pretty cool. We got another film by Eric Williamson. Saw him earlier in the year with his world premiere. His film
and his birthday.
Yes, and Rome actually shot this one as well.
Which this one?
Yes,
you shot this one.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
We did that like right during the pandemic. I think it was the Memorial Day.
Oh, so you? How did y'all deal with that?
We all kind of. Came to the agreement we'll all wear masks and do our best to try to, you know what I mean, like not be all over each other and still make this thing happen. And that wasn't the case because somebody still got COVID.
Yeah, well, the thing that's crazy is now everybody looks back and is like, man, fuck those masks, fuck that. Yeah. Like, but back then, like, it was scary. Like, people were like, oh shit, people are dying. Like,
yep. You knew people who died.
You knew people,
or was sick or in a hospital or something. So you wasn't playing around with it. So it was a serious thing, but it was at that point. It was a little bit more relaxed than the initial part of the pandemic. So we were able to, you know, just work around it. We shot, you know, in a cabin, and we excluded people who did not have to be in the room at certain times when we were filming, and we just worked around it. But for the most part, it worked out. It was cool.
Yeah, we had a couple other films this month. One of them kind of brings into our guest, and we have Prince of D back.
Prince of D.
Yeah. Prince of D. And what is the Prince of D is what? It stands for what?
Well, a long time ago, like I said, when I was working at Home Depot, used to have these aprons on, so everybody used to have nicknames on there. So first I was the best man, then I changed it, I forgot what I was. The one and only. So,
and these were names you came up
with. Yeah, I used to write them on my apron. So one time I put Prince of Darkness on it. So minding my business, no, elderly lady came up, son, you know who that is? That's the devil. So the manager was like, oh, you got to change that. You got to change
Scratch
that.
Scratch it out, Prince of D.
So Prince of D. I abbreviated it and it popped. We had these kids workshops. They used to do like once a month. So it got so bad, they used to have me host it. They used to literally kids show up to see me at Home Depot sometime. I was really amazed. Prince of D, Prince of D. So that's how I popped off at Home Depot. Nice.
But yeah, so Plaquemines was done. It was actually me and Neela Jefferson. We won a grant for it from Create Louisiana.
John was the producer.
Yeah, I was a producer.
Lovely film.
It was a film about the Oysterman of Point Alahash, except changed to the Fisherman in this one, because Nayla had done a documentary on them. We had talked about it before, and how their world changed. But what we were just talking about before was you. What was it? Katrina got you knocked out of the. Was that whenever you kind of got out of Cox, or how did that happen for you?
TV.
Oh man, Katrina hit. Came out of nowhere. I believe I was at, which was formerly Bounce TV, New Orleans Access TV. Yeah. So we was, I think but it was a Thursday or Friday, and manager came in and was like, look, we got to all leave. Everybody be safe.
Oh, wait, you went to, with like Elton and them?
Yeah, I was with Elton.
Okay.
At New Orleans Access TV, Kenny and Elton. So we were just like, yeah, this is going to be a good weekend, because I think we was filming a popular political figure. I'm not going to say her name. But so Katrina hit, boom, we stuck. I went to Arkansas. I went to Pine Bluff, Arkansas with some family members. So first reality to sit in, I was like, wow, I'm in Arkansas. And there was literally like nothing out there. But the people, they was really good. It was a small town, 50,000, but, you know, so.
How did you know anybody there? Or you just...
I knew one guy from my gym when I was at the gym. He showed up at a convention.
But I mean,
center.
How'd you end up there? They bust you there?
No, I was on my way to the Superdome. I had an uncle. He was by himself. So I went to check on him. So my mother was in California at a funeral for an uncle. So I went back to get him, and I was going to go to the Superdome with him. I came like 3 inches from coming in the Superdome. We was actually out there, and I was like, all right, let's just go back home. So a relative called. They said they had a church van. They was going to Arkansas to some of my relatives. So I left my car in current apartments. We got on the church van. That's how we ended up in Arkansas. I had another cousin, but he wound up going to Detroit. He stayed at the hotel. I asked him, did he want to come? He said no. So we got in the church van, headed for Arkansas, and Katrina hit, and we got stuck there. And I was like, wow, I'm in Arkansas. Like, there's nothing out here where we was. It was just like nothing. Then they found out they called with Walmart Wiley World. So we wind up getting into a hotel. They had a rodeo like down the street from it. So it was really nice.
Your first rodeo, literally?
Yeah, well, I didn't go in it, but we stood outside of it and saw it. But, you know, so it was one of them things. So I remember the first, they actually had I ain't gonna say Pelicans, a Hornets game out there. They played the Houston Rockets, the exhibition game at the Verizon Arena for us. So we had a crawfish ball too, and it was horrible. Tastes like they just set them in water. And I don't even eat crawfish. But everything turned out right, so I stayed out there about a year, and I came back.
Damn, a year? Really?
Yeah, about a year. Wow. So I came
So you got
back.
An apartment and all that?
Yeah, I had an apartment out there, and it was pretty cool. But I came back. And when I came back, talked to Elton. Elton was just like, no, it took too long to come back. So I wind up working at a beer company on Almanasa, Crescent Crown. So I wind up having an accident, broke my leg, my fibula. So later on, I'm sitting around, I get a call from Perez. It's like, what you doing? I said, nothing. So you think you come to Birmingham? I said, yeah, well, he said, come to this party Friday. I said, all right, go to the party, meet Jackie. He said, give me till next Friday. He called me Monday, be in Birmingham. So worked at that. We did that for what, about 3-4 months?
Yeah. Yeah, remember? Yeah, it was a PA, like a DIT, but it wasn't a DIT. It was like he was like dumping cars and stuff.
Yeah. It'll be like file loading or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. It was like pre-DIT stuff, but it was DIT and digital, like logs. Yeah, yeah,
digital logging. And,
but also like we also were still shooting on tape at the time, so he was like logging tapes and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, remember we got snowed in for 3 days.
Oh, that was great. Fun. We cooked like a turkey.
Yeah, yeah.
We cooked like a Thanksgiving. We knew that, like, because Birmingham gets snow, but it doesn't get snow like other places. So they were waiting for this blizzard. We went and got it. We were like, well, let's get a turkey. Let's make like macaroni and cheese, like baked macaroni and whatever. We made this huge meal.
Living it up.
Yeah.
Yeah, me and Perez played Madden the whole 3 days.
So tell me, and just to backtrack to Arkansas real quick, was there a movie theater out there that you go to?
Yeah, they had one in the Pine Bluff Mall, but it was sort of like the Dollar Show, because, you know, shout out to Arkansas, but a lot of things, they're like behind with everything, but, you know, they real nice people. They took care of us. They were friendly. The only thing, they all thought we do voodoo. So I got that everywhere I went. So tell me about the voodoo. Do y'all hang out in the French Quarter every week? And I said, no, we don't.
Not all of us.
Yeah, so.
Voodoo sounds about right for Arkansas. That's West Memphis 3 territory, so yeah, that would make a ton of sense. And going back to Nayla, though, we did Plaquemines in 2015, 2016 or so, and I got to sit down and talk to her
about it. How did we realize we both worked in film?
So
I don't remember, honestly. I think maybe he talked Nipmeyer, and he might have mentioned it.
Maybe.
But the real thing was I gave you A Quiet Storm to watch and get your opinion on.
Yeah, I wasn't connected to any producers because I had done Vanishing Pearls, like everything I'd done myself.
Completely on your, yeah.
Yeah, and so, yeah, maybe you were like at the time the closest producer to me, and you had just made a film that looked really good, I thought. And then you connected me to Jake.
Right.
Who shot Vanishing Pearls and, oh, I'm sorry, he didn't shoot Vanishing Pearls, who shot Plaquemines. Yeah. But Jake had shot A Quiet Storm, and it all looked really good, yeah. So I knew you knew how to make movies.
And so the funny thing is, I think we did it like over a weekend. We actually spent like a weekend.
A Quiet Storm?
No. The actual application, yeah.
Yeah.
And put it in, I was like, we'll see how it happens. But I wasn't expecting, because I mean, I didn't. I remember whenever that grant was announced, I was like, who the fuck needs $50,000 for a short film? That's the most bizarre thing I've ever heard.
Us.
Well, and then I actually, yeah, well, that's one of the reasons when I read the script, I was like, oh, this could use it. Because I'm used to making short films of like two people talking
right.
And so I was like, okay, this actually could work because I know how much we had spent for Quiet Storm, and that's why I was mostly talking, was to save money.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is actually ambitious. I was like, okay, so this could work. So I made a realistic budget and everything. Mm-hmm. And like, what was it, 3 weeks later or whatever, got the finalist thing?
Yeah. You know, it's crazy. I turned in the application. I was like 2 minutes late, like 2 minutes past 11:59. So I guess what, 12:01. So definitely missed the deadline, but we still won. So that was cool. And then at the time, my cousin Dawn was working in casting. And so she was really helpful. I ran into Jaren at Jazz Fest the other day, actually.
Yeah, dude, he's everywhere.
He's like the M-line guy. Yeah.
He's bizarre.
And his work is everywhere.
Everywhere.
Yeah, he's acting in everything.
We were, I went to the BFFNO, had a little summit thing over at Cafe Istanbul. And he was one of in Gian's movie. And I was like, oh, and he was there with his sunglasses on indoors looking all cool, whatever, and suave, and answering questions, like doing a Q&A about it.
Yeah.
And then he was also in John Jackson's movie that was like a couple of years. I was like, damn, this motherfucker is in everything.
And my friend Jason Foster just released a film, and he's
is
in that.
No shit.
Uh-huh.
Dude, kudos to him. He's working. That's
yeah,
what
he is.
But it was just nice to see him again. And then it's just been like, he's doing everything, but also still working on indies and shit like that. So that's actually awesome. Shout out Jaren Mitchell, talented actor.
Right.
And so casting wise, I think I had come and bugged you. I was like, we should use Terrence. And so we got him. And then Donna, I know you'd want to go with from the beginning. And then it was Ari and one other Jesse. That were the two last options of that. And so the cast came together nicely. And what was your first narrative? So talk to me about actually making the movie. Was it like a shock about going from documentary to narrative? And
I think one of the biggest shocks or things I had to get over was the fact that it was such a bigger crew. You know, on Vanishing Pearls, a lot of times it was, in the beginning, it was like myself and the DP. I don't even think I ever had a sound person on that film. You know, I paid for that in post. But and then sometimes it was just me. And so on Plaquemines, when it was so many people around, and the people actually treating me like a director when I say that, like holding the door open for me, I was like, what are you doing? So stuff like that was odd. And just learning how to manage a team. Because again, like I said, it was just me. And all I had to think about was the people in the film. So that was interesting. But then I'd recently been working with a director who did both narrative and doc work, and I had learned from her just how important it was to build relationship with actors. And like, I mean, that's all they need. They just need clear communication from you to feel confident. And so I really leaned into that. And so I wanted to make sure that Ari understood everything, Jaren, like I pulled people to the side, Donna. So that was interesting. I think they were all pretty good, but at the end of the day, it all turned out well, you know. I just feel very blessed to have had, I think, a really great crew and a really great cast of hardworking and talented people on my very first film.
It's a short film, but we still had, like, we had trailers and shit. Like, we had a makeup trailer and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, we sure did.
Yeah, and so that was a really weird thing of, like, it wasn't just going from like, okay, work with, because you had kind of mentioned in our other interview, working with friends. Uh-huh. There's some of that, but it was also still like, we had Scott Niemeyer showing up.
Right. And to be clear, those were friends working on Plaquemines. Yes. Like you and I, we weren't like longtime friends, but we were friends. My cousin Dawn was my assistant. My friend Alexis and Dawn were working in casting. Ari, I went to school with his mom. So yeah, this was friends.
Yeah, and Jake, you had met him. We talked to him, I think, before we were in the finals, we had talked to Jake about it. Mm-hmm. And so that was someone else who had kind of been going through the whole pre-pro process and at that point mm-hmm. in time. So him and his crew were, like Tim Jones and those cats, were all on friendly terms, and everybody, it was kind of like a little family unit. What did you take from it? Like whenever all was said and done, because you kind of mentioned about being, I guess, feeling you were having to do documentaries after that, or that was expected of you?
No. So really, what happened was, you know, after Plaquemines, I enjoyed it. And I thought to myself, I want to do this again. But I was kind of intimidated. I'm not going to lie. I was a little, like, people were asking me for more things in that space. Gotcha. And I hadn't really written anything that I thought was ready. And so I was approached about doing a documentary about, which is Commuted. Yep. And I never thought it would take as long as it took. And I don't want to say, you know, I don't want people to think that I'm not happy about the work I did in Commuted. I am. I'm super proud of that film. I'm proud of Danielle and everything that she accomplished. But I never thought it would take 7 years. Mm. And I think because it took so long, and then, you know, people just knew me as the woman working on Commuted, and they kept coming to me with different documentary ideas. And I really didn't make space to finish writing, like the script that you read so many years ago. I did two commercials in that time. But I was just in the documentary world, making connections, applying for grants. I was just so steeped in that world, that I was kind of far removed from narrative for a while. But like I said, even though I love docs, I don't think I'd ever leave them. I owe it to myself, I think, to explore this other creative avenue. So, yeah, I'm going to make sure that this year I keep telling myself, okay, it's May. Where are you with your writing? You're 5 months into 2024, so.
And so for people who are looking for your previous work, for things mm-hmm. like that, do you have a web page? Where can people find you? Or do you have a social that people can go to?
Yeah, I have, my social is, I only have Instagram, so it's at Nayula Jefferson. But then I also have my website, NayulaJefferson.com. And on there, there should be a link for Descended from the Promised Land. There's a link for Commuted right now. It'll take you to HBO Max so you can find Danielle Luna, Supermodel. Vanishing Pearls, I just got out of my first distribution deal. It ended in February, so we're going to put it on more platforms in the next coming months. And then, what else? Oh, Plaquemines. We got to find distribution for Plaquemines.
Yeah, it was on Shorts TV, but I think that might have come up.
Yeah, and now there's another home.
Yeah, well, now there's options for homes. That was
problem. There's so many, right? I mean, so much has changed.
In 6 or 8 years, whatever it was.
Yeah.
But thank you for coming out today, madame. Always a pleasure talking to you. We will keep an eye on your next project that you can't talk about yet.
I know.
It's always nice talking to Nayla, getting a chance to reconnect, see what she's up to now, rocking out those documentaries left and right.
Nayla and I are elementary school, I would say, what would you say?
Thinking about that hard?
No. I was in a couple grades higher than she was, but we went to the same elementary school. Gotcha. Actually, her sister was in the same grade as I was.
It was you and Guyana, I want to say, it was also at the same one, because remember whenever we talked in his podcast.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right. Yep.
But so besides Plaquemines, we also got a little bit of an interesting film, Valerio's Day Out, about a jaguar that escapes the zoo and starts mauling animals left and right. It's got plenty of violence. Plenty of
that's great. We love that.
Like, dude, you're goddamn right. It's not a talkie. You know?
No. Prince, it seems like it's right up your alley. You're gonna have to check this episode.
Does this sound like something you're interested in, Prince? I don't know about the sound yet, but it's like it's got a jaguar on the loose.
Wait, no, yeah, and again, going back to it, like you know, obviously, I'm assuming Time Code might not be your cup of tea, but you've been
influential,
influential in guiding the hand of Time Code to a certain degree.
I like the movie Beast with Idris Elba, so I'm sure that would be interesting, you know?
That is a sound fucking picture right there. Yeah. That is very... Every time, because that's the whole thing is you don't know where it is. So they have the freaking surround sound, knowing you're hearing the shit. Yeah, that's dope.
Yeah.
This one is not like that. This is much more of a documentary type thing. But yeah, actually, a jaguar got out of a zoo and mauled a bunch of creatures as it made its way across town. But it's done very interesting. Also got into Sundance, if not mistaken.
Oh, nice.
Congrats. Michael Arcos was the director. We had not worked with him, but he's actually been doing a lot of stuff lately. We sat down and got to talk to Michael, which was kind of a fun interview.
What's here?
So one of the things I notice, tell me if I'm wrong, is this a little VCR double connection thing so you can bootleg old VHSs or make new copies?
Well, sure, but also one of my side hustles is transferring like old media and digitizing it.
Oh, nice.
Or like say like a music video, like they hit me up and they want that magnetic tape quality. And they want to go, like, the real shit. Like, they don't want to do the, like, digital version of it. So, like, I do a lot of that. A lot of people are like, hey, can we rent your VHS camera? Your VHS-C camera? And I'm like, at this point, although, like, I'm married to magnetic tape, I do feel like you could capture the same quality if you shoot the shit in 4K and then just downgrade it. And, you know, you could just, like, dub it, you know, 5-6 times kind of thing.
So that's one of the questions I have is you had mentioned before that you feel most comfortable on magnetic tape. What draws you to it?
Well, it was accessibility. It was like mainly like I feel like in my life, in high school, I had access to this. This was like late 90s, and it was already outdated. We had like an 80s television studio, like donate the school, the entire like TV production thing, but it was all VHS, giant like, I don't even know what you call them, like little spin wheels to kind of get through. You have to punch in, you know. So that was like how I was introduced to even just like attempting at making a movie. So it was like, it's definitely where I'm definitely married to the quality in a sense. Like it's, I still watch VHS. I like, if there's a comfort element to the grain, and like sometimes I fall asleep to just watching a movie in the background, and I prefer it on magnetic tape. But.
That makes sense. I remember being in, and I guess it was middle school when we first started, or maybe elementary, it was the same thing, whereas the freaking old VHS cameras that were, you know, the size of Nebraska, and you had to put the freaking actual VCR and carry it around and everything. Yeah. And we learned on that. And it's just, it's funny to go back because we're always talking about like high eight and stuff like that, and just old ways of digital and how things look different now. In your career, how has that kind of changed what you do, or has it changed at all as far as how you make movies?
Yeah, my intention is to make a film that, you know, my parents could see at an AMC theater, you know, like, and like my last project I just shot called Quilly about a dysfunctional relationship is like shot on like pretty, I don't even know gear, like modern gear. Like I usually hire a cinematographer and they choose what gear they want and what we agree on. But yeah, I love magnetic tape. There's a project, a feature that I might have to just shoot on DV just because I have everything I need really. But yeah, I'm open to like all formats really. Like
you did Valerius, you did a couple other ones that you had sent over, and one of them the death of a cat getting mauled by dogs, and I was like, okay, well, that hits too close to home sometimes. So I was like, I don't want to show this. Did a good festival run, right?
It did, yeah. Like the horror community really kind of, you know, got excited about it, and it played a lot of horror film festivals. It played like Overlook. I played Fantasia, I believe, or genre festivals.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think that it was the horror community that made that film successful, because I was submitting it to like True False and shit like that, and like I thought I made a pretty straightforward documentary. But yeah.
This is one of the things that we were talking about. Is that so? You got was a special jury award at Sundance?
Yeah. It was an insane honor and very unexpected. Like, I actually wish they might have actually told me or gave me a hint before, because I just went on stage, accepted the award, and, like, sounded like an asshole. But it got a few accolades that Yeah, probably the most out of any project I've ever worked on.
Well, and so what's the, what is that kind of experience like? Because up until that point, I'm, and even now, we're talking about like doing stuff kind of short form just for the sake of short form, like you were talking about, because like you would love to do features, but sometimes it's not realistic to do features because it's $13.5 million or whatever. What is it like to go into a Sundance that a lot of people, you know, a friend of mine submitted a million times and has never even gotten in, much less like get in and then win and then kind of get embraced? What does that feel like just as a filmmaker?
I mean, it's for sure just like, it's liberating. I mean, I feel like for the longest time, I kind of had this like punk ethos about it and just made it to make it, was never good at self-promotion, was really just trying to understand, you know, how to get it seen or bought or, you know, these kind of things, but it was always secondary. So like, I feel like the experience was amazing, but I really didn't know what to expect. And I feel like if, you know, I knew what I knew now, I would have, you know, approached it differently. I feel like with that kind of attention, I think they're just like, what's next? You know, like they wanted to do like even like a Hulu thing, like where it would be shorts based off of like real escape. Kind of, they're like, do you want to keep going with this, you know? And like, I kind of regret not taking them up now because like, whatever, I'm fucking broke. But like, yeah, I was kind of like too cool for school and I had a feature that I wanted to make and I was like, no, but I want to do this thing, you know, and like whatever. So I'm like, maybe I should have maybe let them like, you know, mold me a little bit and see where it took me, you know, in my career.
Well, so that's interesting because we just talked to a documentarian and she won an award and got distribution for a short film and then proceeded to get going back to documentaries because she did one and just kind of led to another. Whereas you're saying basically like if they come up with you with something and suggest, you probably should maybe take that because that might lead to something else.
Should take
it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I have regrets about that. I was like, because I felt like I went to like say Sundance with, you know, I have something in my back pocket. Got a little lookbook. I have a little mood board. Okay, you know, man. Like, yeah. I got like an unfinished script, but it was unfinished and rushed at the end of the day. And like also a movie that people told me is going to cost $13.5 million. I feel like, you know, they maybe would like to see you do something on your own or, you know, like this. But I've only worked in short form, so, yeah.
Well, so what, you said you had just finished one. Is that something that's come out already or that you had done?
Oh, no, I've just finished two scripts.
Okay, gotcha.
And, like, I've written two feature-length scripts, but have only done, like, I won the most recent one is called, like, Bachelor House, and it's, like, a swamp drama. And my friend was trying to convince me to shoot on 16mm, so we did a lot of 16mm tests and like little shorts here and there, but nothing that's cohesive. So and then I started writing other stuff and working on other stuff in short form, so it kind of like it's just on the back burner. I think I might like take a year off and move to the desert and write it as like a novel and then be like, here's the thing, and then like, you know, we'll see. Yeah. It's a pretty convoluted swamp drama, but yeah.
And so, like, everybody kind of has their goals as far as things go. Where is your stand? Do you want to kind of just get into the narrative medium, or would you rather be able to do like kind of feature length documentary stuff? Or do you have a preference of those?
I would love to have the privilege of working on a feature that I wrote, you know, and directed. Like that's kind of the trajectory I'm on, slowly but surely. Like. I have some things in like my back pocket that I could just do, like I said, like shoot it on DV or, you know, whatever. But I'm still trying to like navigate potentially getting it funded and stuff like this. So, yeah.
So if people like what they see and want to see more of you, you have a website, you have social media anywhere?
Yeah, I have a website that I haven't updated since 2020, around the time when I was in Sundance. But it has like some of my stuff and like some other movies you could watch. Yeah, it's michaelarcos.com. I've got an Instagram, also my name. Yeah, I like postcards. I like random knocks at the door.
You can get fan mail. You can get people sending you like little stuck together pieces of thing. They might appreciate that. Sweet. Thank you, Michael. Appreciate you taking the time around.
Thank y'all. Appreciate you guys coming out.
So Prince, check it out. If you have to transition back in the TV and film world, and more, I'm asking more on the film side because I already know the answer to this question, but I want the rest of the world to get to know, you know, who Prince Adi is. What would be the premium position or department that you would want to work in if you worked on like real big budget movies?
Well, since I'm an audio guy, probably Boom, because I don't know anything else about the film too much right now, but I think that would be it, or pretty much anything.
I know you had an interest in pyro at one
time. Oh, I forgot about the pyro
effects.
Yes, pyro.
He's a big fan of pyro. I know
pyro
that.
Technics, WWE HD. Oh, man.
Right. See, I didn't even bring it up.
I know. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Like, they are on a roll right now, boy.
You and John should be best friends. Like John's like, we should all talk about WWE and
you goddamn right. No, I said we should actually try to partner with some wrestling companies because that's the hot shit right now, dude. Did you see WrestleMania?
Yeah,
Off the fucking chain.
I saw it. I actually got a friend of mine as a professional wrestler. Shout out to Purple Haze. He wrestles for Wildcat.
You're fucking right, Wildcat.
So been wrestling since Mid South. Kevin Von Erich since the beginning.
Did you see the Iron Claw?
I bought it last week. I haven't watched it.
You haven't watched it yet?
No. Okay. I told you the work time schedule.
Did you like The Wrestler with Mickey Rourke?
Oh, yes. I love it. My favorite line in the movie is the end of it when he said, "Nobody gives a shit about me," or something. He told a girl, "The world don't give a shit about me." They don't, you know.
That was kind of a talky movie.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, it is, but it does have, it's also got violence in it. The deathmatch scene got some interesting spots in it. Also, just him collapsing the whole time. Like the scene where he's cutting the meat and then fucking slices him shit out. Beautiful. Beautiful stuff.
Yeah. But the pyro roam, definitely. The pyro. I'm all about that. But WWE, for some strange reason, they don't do pyro for the intros no more.
I'll tell you why, because that's, they started bringing that out. Are backing it up because they wanted to make it special because McMahon, before he got forced out, was just not into it as much, trying to cut the budget and shit. Yeah. Since Nick Khan, the Great, has taken over along with Triple H and Lee Fitting, you see Cody's got that pyro kicking up.
All right. Y'all probably need your own wrestling podcast.
Dude, it's hot right now, but it's right. It's the freaking special effects and pyro. Like I always go back to Terminator when I worked on it. It's the only way in the film industry. Is the only spot that you'll ever get to see somewhat like a war zone in the right condition. It's awful. With the freaking bombs going off, little like pipe bombs and shit.
That's a lot. That's have a lot of gunpowder on movie sets.
Yeah.
You ever work pyro?
Was that? How about? No, I've seen it 1,000 times. I only done camp.
Were you on, was that Jonah Hex or something that there was cameras that got destroyed and stuff when he burned?
Yeah, it was Jonah Hex. Yeah. They put 100 gallons of gasoline in a set that we built, which was like a clock tower or a church or something, and they ignited it, and the boom was way bigger than they anticipated, and it spread out of control really quick, and the whole set burned down, and condors, and we lost camera gear and different, you know.
What kind of were people like, oh shit, or were they just like, yo, we got the shot, good, or it was just like panic, or
director was kind of like, man, let it burn, this is beautiful, keep rolling, and we like, are you serious? Like, there's gear burning in the frame, like you, I think we should cut it, but at that point, it was just a whole disaster of not having a water truck close enough.
That's
and
crazy.
All kind of dumb shit that happened. But if it can happen, it will on a movie set.
Well, on that note, John, you were able to talk to Sadie May and Eric Williamson about their new film. Let's roll that.
So, film, here we go again with Eric Williamson. Thank you for joining us again. And Sadie May, first time for Time Code. Have you actually heard of Time Code? I actually don't. I always ask people these questions because I don't think anybody actually has all the time.
Yeah, Eric actually explained it to me walking over here. But I have seen some other friends in the film industry do this before.
Sweet. And then Mr. Williamson, here we go again. This was 2021 that came out?
Yes, yes.
So at that point in time, we were launching back into the kind of, what do they call it, work back safely or whatever. So was this your first thing back, or had you actually done a couple of shows before this one?
I had shot a couple shorts during 2020. I shot two. And first AD'd and second AD'd a couple big projects. So we had the protocols. We, you know, kind of snatched some supplies from bigger sets to help us with our smaller set. So we had hand sanitizer, mask, all the things. We COVID tested all the protocols. We still.
Yeah, that's actually a huge deal. I remember whenever they first annihilated that like, a first AD friend of mine was just like, this is a life changer again because of the timing and everything. It's just like, oh, if this person pops, then your entire schedule's redone. From an acting standpoint, does that throw you off at all? Where it's just like, all right, got a COVID test, or this person might not be available, and all of a sudden, maybe not just for this project, but just in general, like if you're coming in expecting to do a scene and then somebody tests positive, does that throw everything off for as an actor?
I mean, in the literal sense, yeah, but I think as an actor, you're just kind of prepared for anything and everything. Like, you know, lines change on the day and you just go with it.
That's a good way of looking at it, because I know a lot of people who are just in that method zone are just like, no, fuck this. So for this one, though, tell me about, so we've talked before about kind of getting friends to help out. What was this one like? Was it the same kind of deal where you were like, hey, I got this picture coming up, who wants to go? And then like kind of how you had met Sadie and then kind of started the whole conversation about this.
This one was actually tougher because I had a couple people, crew lined up, and then work started really popping off. So people had to go back and just make the money that they lost during 2020. And it's kind of the same that happened with the strikes now. So I had some crew members last minute dip out and then replace them. So as people came and went, the flow kind of changed, and I had to adapt with grip, electric, camera, even actors. You know, there was an issue with actor availability and swapping some people out. But with Sadie and Kyler, I mean, they were committed to the project and they carried a lot of the weight. So we had the core there. It was just like the small, like she said, changes every day. You just have to adapt and overcome.
What was it like? Because this one, was this the first one you kind of had some input in the whole film? Or because you said that this kind of came about with y'all talking about things and then kind of going, oh, this is a good idea.
Yeah, the amount of input and what am I trying to say? Collaboration that Eric, you know, was open to. That was the first time I'd experienced that.
It was mostly her story, and I just kind of, well, most of the elements were pieces of her story, and we just kind of embellished or, you know, made it our own in just different ways. So I wanted to be fair to her and give her a chance to tell her story, but also tell my version of it. So we worked well bouncing off ideas and just saying, what if we do this? Yes or no. And then, you know, Kyler was great about bringing the acting out of her as well.
So what was that process like? Did you kind of just sit there and come up with the script together? Or did you kind of like get her stories and kind of piece it together with you? Or what was the writing process for this one?
It actually went really quick. And again, I'll go back to it's a half hour runtime. So people don't want to sit through that long because attention spans aren't what they used to be. And everybody just wants to scroll. But her story is so interesting, and that was just like the tip of the iceberg. Like we told a short in 30 minutes, but it could have been a feature. It could have been a series. It could have been a lot. This is just one story that she had that we kind of just took and ran with. So,
and for you, what is that like? So a lot of people, obviously, most people would understand what it's like to kind of see your story on screen. What is that feeling like? Kind of like acting the whole process for you?
I think... I don't know. It's like you always kind of like envision your life as a movie, or I do anyways. And so seeing it for real didn't feel that different. Plus it was like, you know, the characters have different names. And so it's also like, it's not, you know, a factual, moment by moment story. So, yeah, it wasn't that crazy in that sense.
It was cool because we did separate the characters from like her actual story in real life. Like I said, we just took elements and made it our own. But yeah, so it wasn't just like beating her down. Like, remember this shit? So, but it is, you know, some dark stories, and I'm happy that she shared them with us, and I'm happy that people get to watch it now. And just, you know, there's, you know.
Yeah, it always just kind of occurs because we had talked before about like the Iron Claw. And so it's one of those ones where you're just like, it's not a completely factual thing, but it is just kind of like, fuck, I have to relive that, or just kind of things come up and just like, yeah, it's weird seeing someone's interpretation, I guess, is the best way of like life events.
Yeah, I guess the only different thing about this was I do remember there's one scene in the short that's very emotionally heavy. And I just remember some of the actors at the table, like after they'd call cut, I'd sit back down and they're like, are you okay? You know, they'd reach out and like touch my hand. Cool.
And so for you, madame, moving forward, like since then, what have you been up to? Because we talked to you again. We got to see When I Die. But for you, we haven't really talked about it. So after this film, what was the next kind of projects for you and when you went from?
Truly, Not that much. Mostly, I went mostly into writing. I think this definitely inspired me to start writing more of my own stories. And so I got involved with, I have a coach out in LA, and she teaches writing at CalArts. And so she started a little like Zoom writing thing class. And so I got really tight with those kids in that class. And I love writing and having it read out loud, you know, so you can hear it. And so, yeah. That's what I popped 3 features out in like a year and a half. Oh, nice. So.
And she also directed a short.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nice.
That hopefully you'll show at some point.
It's funny because a lot of people are very, I guess, humble. Instead of being like, I did this, like.
More so hesitant.
There you go. It wasn't. So what about that short? Where can people find that?
It's not out yet.
There we go. All right. We will be showing that then, hopefully.
Yeah. It's called Geocache. I got some really great local talent, me and 3 others act in it, and it's just a fun idea, man. We gotta put a button on the end and kind of tie it up, but once that's done, we probably will go festival route with it.
And then for the features that you wrote, are those kind of fleshed out? Those are done?
Yeah, I got an option offered on one, but I wasn't ready at that point, I think, and I was still too controlling, and I've definitely learned now that if you want to write shit, you just got to let it go.
Amen. We talk about that all the time of like, if they're going to offer you this, would you take it? And it's like, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
The hardest part is just sitting down and doing it. Once you like clean your workspace and sit there and start typing, it's, you know, magical.
So if people are looking for y'all on socials, anything like that, you got to like direct them to anyone in particular, Instagram, Twitter, or X, or YouTube, or whatever.
I don't post a ton on Instagram, but I do share stories a lot on Instagram, and my Instagram handle is at @S80May, Sadie May.
And then Eric?
Empty Pocket Productions. Again, like her, I don't post as much unless I have projects happening, but, you know, when this comes out, I'll throw it back up there.
I appreciate you guys coming out for that. We're always happy to see more of your work, and hope I look forward to whenever you finish up, we can actually see yours as well. That's awesome.
All right, so Prince of D, all right, we still here with Prince of D, y'all. And I got one more question for you, Prince. Can you give our listeners just an idea of what a guide to extremely rolling movies are?
Oh, man. First of all, got to be a lot of action, a lot of gunplay, violence. The audio has to be completely immersive all around the theater. The bass management has to be on boom explosions. I mean, even a punch has to have some boom in it. You know, I mean, it just had to be an all-around explosive movie.
Right, so the sound got to be bang. For it to be extremely rolling.
If the sound not rolling, it's whack.
So lastly, Prince, I'm sure, you know, the lady listeners out there are wondering, are you single? Because a Taco Tico, you know, movie date, you know, sounds pretty good.
Yeah, at the present moment, you know, I'm single.
We might have to raffle you off at one of the...
We only do Dolby and IMAX. We only do Dolby and IMAX.
Well, thanks again for coming through. We'll have you on the next one.
Check out 707. Plenty of good movies out there. Plenty of interesting interviews. Always a pleasure to have Prince D on.
When you coming back, Prince? You got to come back and visit.
When it fits my schedule. Like I said, I'm free Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. You know, that's my schedule. But, at my job, we deal with hurricanes. So it's about to get busy for us. So we be on call constantly. So schedule going to be kind of tight. But if it's the weekend, then we can rock.
Cool.
All right.
Thank you to Prince for coming out again.
Yeah.
Time Code Presents is produced by Ricardo Barros and hosted by Ron Julian, John Wood, and Randy Perez. Special thanks to our guests Nayla Jefferson, Michael Arcos, Sadie May, and Eric Williamson. Super shout out to the immortal Prince of D for all his cinematic wisdom. When in doubt, just make it boom. If you want to stay up on what we're doing at Time Code, head over to timecodenola.com or just ask somebody. Later.